It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kickstart it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on a podcast. Hello and welcome, everybody. It is Tuesday, March 30th, 2021, which means it's time to get nerdy. Welcome to episode 183 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest gaming podcast in the multiverse. I, of course, am Maction. I'm joined by my co-host, my co-conspirator, my comrade, and very funny comedian, Mr. Nice Guy 425, also known as Lom Galuka. Dude, how the heck are you today?
Dude, I'm doing really, really good, man. It's spring break for my kids. So,
spring break, whoa! Are they going wild? They hitting the juice early today?
And I'm actually recording this from Cancun.
Mm, nice.
We're gonna do some parades. Mm-hmm. We're gonna get a little bit crazy. Mm-hmm. And we just said, you know what? Screw it. Social distancing, that's so 2020. We're just gonna get out among the people, big crowds, and just go wild. So that's what we're doing here.
You are a man of the people. Frankly, you have to be out there. They need you.
I got to be out there breathing the same air, you know, inhaling the same particles. You know, I don't understand these masks, like, not my thing, hashtag sarcasm. But no, Mac, life is good in all seriousness. Had a quick little getaway with the family this weekend. Did a little bit of swimming, social distanced. Ate some good food. Had a good time. Watched some really, really good movies and stuff, and some good shows, and played some awesome games that we'll talk about later. But life is really, really good, man. I'm loving being a gamer. It's a great time to be alive, man.
For my part, my week's been relatively straightforward. I did my taxes a little while back.
Ooh, and, what? What? And, party.
And Mrs. The Mac and I, we got our taxes back, so I felt okay to splurge just a little bit. Which leads me to saying what's going on and why things were a little bit messy. Because what I did was I bought new monitors for my computer,
yes.
Which means a new resolution, which means everything that had been sort of resolution based on the stream needed to be adjusted as we started going live. But lest you think that I opted for, like, you know, ultra wide, nah, that's not me. I wound up picking up a couple of 20-inch Samsung monitors for $60 a piece. They were on sale online, which I don't recollect exactly who to shout out for putting me onto the deal, but it was a fellow Discordian. On the subject of fellow Discordians, Beleg Maradin, they've canceled their Call of Cthulhu game tonight, which means that they get to be here instead of streaming that. So we are thrilled to have you, man.
Thanks for coming.
And shout out to Frosty Jeff. Good to see you, man. Anyway,
stay frosty.
That's been my week. The excitement of the week. Everything else, I think I have ready to talk about near the end in what we've been watching and what we've been playing.
Yes, indeed. Now, Mac, I did pick up one cool thing. Your monitors made me think about this, and I don't technically have it in my possession yet. But I like graphic novels, right? There's something about reading them in physical format that digital format just can't duplicate. Like, I like laying in bed with a big compendium and my arms hurting, feeling like I'm getting that muscle mass increased because I'm holding this big graphic novel. So I picked up Invincible Compendium 1 by Robert Kirkman. It was recently turned into a show on Amazon Prime, and I'm excited for it. Now, Mac, I'm the type of person where if I see that something is one price and it later goes up to be a higher price, I can't buy it at that higher price. That's just how I am. You know what I mean? I will wait until it drops back down to the lower price. And today on Amazon, that compendium, despite the fact that the new show was recently released, dropped back down to the price that it was about 2 months ago. And I jumped on it, even though it is out of stock, and I will have to wait. So I feel like I got a good deal on this 1,000 pages of Robert Kirkman goodness, and I'm excited to dive in.
Dude, I'm looking forward to your report on that later on. Be sure, double space, Times New Roman, font size 12 at the most.
One-inch margins, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One-inch margins whole way around, double space, no more than one indent at the beginning of a hard return.
That's exactly right. Well, Mac, on that note, I say we do what we do best, which is not talking about formatting essays.
Are you kidding? The Chicago Manual of Style isn't what this podcast is all about?
It's not, but
don't tell me you're an Associated Press guide kind of man.
You know what?
Friendship over.
Let's let bygones be bygones and do what we do best and hop right into that gaming news, my friend. What do you think about that?
Let's do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is episode number 183 of Two Nerds in a Pod, formatted in Associated Press. Let's keep things moving with these news stories that we got this week. Mech, it's not a hot one. It is not a hot week for news. But we got kind of a theme here. The first one is about some games that I have really enjoyed playing over the past few months that Nintendo provided to us. This is on GameInformer.com by Brian Shea. When Nintendo announced Super Mario 3D All-Stars, a compilation for Nintendo Switch that contains HD versions of Super Mario 64, Super Mario Sunshine, and Super Mario Galaxy, the developer stated that the collection would only be available until March 31st, 2021. While just last year Nintendo reconsidered the limited time nature of Jump Rope Challenge, the gaming giant appears to be sticking to its guns with the Mario 3D All-Star compilation, as well as the Battle Royale Super Mario Bros. 35, which has been free to Switch Online subscribers since its launch in October. So Mac, Nintendo put out these awesome games, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're games that people have been waiting for a long time. A lot of us have wanted a Mario 64 remake for a long time. They finally released it as part of this collection. It goes away March 31st in digital. I believe it will still be available physically. Mario Run, Mario 35, goes away as well.
Okay, so I have a quick interjection question. Because it goes away could mean different things. I know what I think when I hear the term it goes away, but I want just some clarification for anybody who is not super read into Nintendo. Will you, if you purchased it and downloaded it onto your Switch, will you still be able to play it?
Yes, you will, of course. And it also says if you deleted it somehow, you could re-download it, but you will not be able to purchase it digitally going forward.
Okay. So if you don't lose access to your account, you will retain it. If you retain your physical copy, you will retain it. But for a digitally distributed item, it will no longer be purchasable for future people. As of tomorrow,
yeah. And same thing with Mario 35, which is fantastic. It's going to be gone. I mean, Mac, this goes back to the conversation we always have, right? About, you know, physical versus digital. And my bigger question for you is why even do this? Like, what does Nintendo have to gain from taking away the ability to purchase this digitally, which is it costs them less, right, in packaging and manufacturing than a physical? Like, I just don't understand this.
Oh, dude, if I understood, if only I understood. I am the last person to be asking to try and make a case, but I will give it my best shot.
Give it your best shot.
I'm going to fire away, okay? Thank you, Pat Benatar.
Yes.
But I feel like the only couple of arguments that I see in favor of cutting off access to a digital, you know, digitally distributed thing or what have you, is one, a lack of desire to support the product with either product updates or bug fixes or, you know, whatever back-end work needs to be done. That is an argument for cutting these games off.
Certainly.
But what I don't understand is the ideas related to / revolving around it doesn't occupy any space. Arguably, it occupies some very limited space on a hard drive somewhere.
On a server you're talking about? Yeah.
So I suppose, theoretically speaking, whatever this game is, and especially in the case of that Battle Royale Mario game, where obviously it's occupying server space because it is an online head-to-head thing.
Right.
So if you were so strapped for server space, for time, for bandwidth, that you have to remove it, in order to make way for new things, or, you know, not the others. And in the case of a free-to-play game, like the Mario, what was it, Mario 35?
Mario 35, yeah.
Yeah, of Mario 35, that's the one thing that I can see, because doing that costs money. And with no microtransactions and with no purchase to perpetuate it, that's the one situation that I can, I mean, I'm not happy about it, but I can see it being like, okay, yeah, I guess you can get rid of that, and I'll, and I understand the principle of the thing, but something like the Mario collection that people paid money for, seems like you could have held on to the server for a little while longer.
Right. I mean, it's been out not that long. I mean, and it's not even a matter of creating artificial demand, because I think most people who wanted this bought it, right? It's not like the Nintendo Mini, where they had limited copies, or rather limited modules, and then said, oh, we're releasing more. Like, I mean, there's no reason to do this, Nintendo. Come on. There's absolutely no reason. But it is what it is. That's how they operate. Mac, let's keep things moving. There's only like 3 news stories this week. It's a slow news week. And for topic of the week, we're just going to have a cool discussion. But we'll get to that later. So, next news story. CD Projekt Red. Let's talk about them. This is by Jenny Zhang on GameSpot.com. While Cyberpunk 2077 was removed from the PlayStation Store in December 2020, it looks like the game could be on the way back to the digital store front, provided Sony deems the game fit for a return. You've seen a theme today, Mac. In an investor call, SVP of Business Development Michael Nowakowski shared via Kotaku, quote, "We have published several patches. We have just published a really big one. Blah, 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 blah." Mac, Cyberpunk was taken off of the PlayStation Store because it was so buggy. It just wasn't working. And Sony is the one who made the decision to pull it. Like, what are your thoughts on a bad game being pulled from a store? There are plenty of games that are just bad out there. But a game that had high expectations being bad, is that justification for it being removed completely?
Well, as a general guiding principle, video games, like books and movies before them, are a form of art. And even if it's not a form of art that I like or agree with, or even if it's buggy, I feel sad when it's less accessible. And Sony decided to pull it.
Yeah, yeah. I get where they were coming from.
Yeah, and as a publisher, it's there as a platform. It, you know, there's no requirement for them to support it. There's no need for them to put it up if they feel like it's damaging, I guess, the brand of Sony, or if it's not working well with. I understand. I don't like it, but I understand. I feel like I understand where Sony was coming from. They wanted to do damage control. You know, there were people who were excited, they wanted to buy it, they wanted to play it on their PlayStation, and it just wasn't up to their standards. And I mean, do you think we're going to, I mean, what do you think? Do you think we're going to see Cyberpunk 2077 come back?
I think we will, and I get where Sony was coming from, because a lot of people were asking for refunds. Mm-hmm. And then CD Projekt Red was like, yeah, if you want a refund, just talk to Sony, they'll take care of it. And Sony was like, well, actually, no, we didn't even know that they were going to say that, right? So I get Sony's frustration, and they probably just said, you know what, let's get this crap off of here. You know, they're misrepresenting what we're willing to do. It's not a good game. So I get that. But I compare it to, like, comedy or music. Like, your favorite musician, your favorite rapper, your favorite band is going to put out some early stuff, and maybe it's going to be bad, right? And then maybe they'll put out some awesome stuff, 3 or 4 great albums. Then maybe they put out a new one that's not good. I don't think that that bad stuff should be deleted from the internet. I think it should continue to exist because it shows a story. It tells a story of progression. It shows their early stuff. It shows when they hit their stride, right? It shows when they sold out, right, at some point, as we all like to say. And then it shows when they return back to their roots. And I just think it's kind of cool to follow those types of stories. And so CD Projekt Red, a company that made The Witcher 3, they've made a lot of really great games. To me, it's interesting that they had one that was a flop. You know, and I think that that's a part of gaming history that should continue to be there. Even if patches kind of prevent us from really seeing history, right? Because eventually it'll get patched and the bad stuff will be forgotten. But I don't believe in it being taken.
Yeah, so I think as Beleg Maradin brings up in the chat, I guess the solution that satisfies both your and my perspective on it, but still hopefully allows Sony to save face, is just selling it as an as-is. It's like, dudes, this is Cyberpunk 1.0. We're not going to give you refunds. You should know that bugginess is well established at this point. Buyer beware.
Right. And, I mean, we know that it's going to come out for PS5. There's going to be a PS5 upgrade, right? I would assume by that point that it's going to be fixed. So be patient. Like, if you knew it's bad, don't buy it day one. And you know, I think Sony should have just left it up there. But I get where they're coming from.
Real quick, I want to throw this one out here that Frosty brings up and I think is worth mentioning. Well, it becomes Sony's problem, he says. From a customer service, which I think is bad, as someone who worked in retail, I wouldn't want to deal with another store's problems, you know? I hear ya. There's already a big enough expectation on Sony to be the one to cure people's concerns on, you know, stuff, which clearly CD Projekt Red had that expectation as well. Just go talk to Sony for those refunds, folks.
Well, I agree, and I will counter with, what if it was a studio that just made a game that was universally accepted as a 3 out of 10? Like, should Sony take that game down as well? Or is it simply the fact that this came from a notable studio and that notable studio then misrepresented Sony's willingness to give refunds?
Well, I think that would be a different situation, because in the case that it's just a 3 out of 10, that just winds up being not a good game rather than a game that was deficient or a game that was, you know, that had been rushed or broken in a way. That sort of expectation of, you know, something actually being workable or functional is sort of there in almost any product that you purchase. So, you know, if it's a problem that it's a 3 out of 10, it's not an issue with actual functionality. It's an issue with, well, you know, you didn't make a good game.
Yeah, and we could talk about this, like, this is like a whole podcast.
It's true.
We do have limited time. Frosty, Jeff, I legitimately appreciate your perspective. I had to play devil's advocate. No, you're good, bro. I'm glad you did make us linger on this topic. That's a great topic. Last thing real quick, Mac. New Xbox wireless headset. Bottom line, man, this thing costs $500. It's the same price as the new Xbox Series X, which, I mean, I think that we would be in agreement that that's too much. But have you ever had an audio experience that's worth $500? Maybe I should rephrase that, a headset experience.
Okay, it's interesting that you should ask. I've not had what I would call a $500 headset experience, but when I was growing up, the best that I had headset-wise were just these little, you remember those cruddy old little over-the-ear ones, and they had that teeny thin metal, they were like Walkman, you know, headphones. And I had stuff like that or really bad earbuds. That was all I had for the longest time. And then back in my technology reviewing days, I was sent a pair of headphones that had a lot higher standard of quality. They were not quite cans like what I'm wearing right now, but they were closer in that. And I listened to a song that I had heard many times before. But the increased fidelity from the headphones kind of brought a tear to my eye. It was kind of like I had, you know, it was like I had never actually experienced the song before, because I had experienced it. So what I'm getting at is that I understand that there is a point at which you get a much better audio experience. I think there's a tapping out point, and I think you see where I'm going with this with respect to the $500 audio experience, but I do think that the first time you experience a really good song with a really good set of headphones is an experience. And, you know, yeah. I think everybody should have one. I don't know if the $500 is the right level, though.
I think it's absurd. Apple's doing the same thing. I mean, we could go on and on about how absurd this is, but I think we'll leave it at that. That has been our news for the week.
All right. Well, now we are going to turn to the past. We've looked at what's going on now. Let's look backward at some of the things that got us here. This week, in years before, there have been a few interesting titles that I want to highlight. One is a little thing released in 2012 called Mushroom Kingdom Fusion. Now, this would have been the public release, which I think would have been 0.74 or so, rather than earlier releases, so that's what I'm going for with this one. Mushroom Kingdom Fusion, an interesting game, obviously based on the date, you kind of know whereabouts it came out in 2012. It was made with Game Maker, and the idea was to take the framework of a Super Mario game, kind of Super Mario 3-ish, right? And to incorporate new and different characters into it. You can play as Sonic, you can play as Simon Belmont, there are a few other characters, and the game had been designed to work with all these things, with some various, you know, mechanics throughout. Now, it doesn't play as though you are playing straight through, you know, one of the Mario games. It's its own sort of thing with different worlds, different whatever. And at the time, in 2012, I was a big fan of it. It was not my favorite of the fan-made Mario games, but it was certainly one that I had a good time playing around with in the early 2010s. I will admit, it has not held up as well as I would have thought. I've recently played it, and it's possible, because it is a real thing, that there are sometimes old games that work well on an architecture and then don't work well on the new ones. Which is entirely possible, but it's my feeling that it just did not, you know, I might have had a bit too much nostalgia glasses for there. But in case any of you, like me, that Mushroom Kingdom Fusion was a thing for you, just wanted to mention it. Now, I will just say that there is another game that I got to because of Mushroom Kingdom Fusion that we're going to talk about later on down the line when we celebrate its release, that still has held up a lot better and is, in my opinion, the superior thing. But, you know, nonetheless, a moment for Mushroom Kingdom Fusion.
How have I never heard of this before? This looks amazing. I'm looking at it right now. This looks amazing.
Yeah, give it a shot. It is kind of tough. It has a bit of a difficult, difficulty curve, but give it a shot. Let me know what you think. Although I will say, and this is one of the reasons why this year, in 2021, I wanted to focus a little bit more on including fan games and ROM hacks, because these are things that are really good experiences that often fly under the radar. So,
yeah,
hopefully we'll get some more deep pulls for video game history coming up. Just a couple more. In 2002, we saw the release of Star Wars Jedi Knight 2 for the PC. Now, this one, noteworthy, especially because on last episode, 182, we missed a viewer trivia question about this game last time. So, somewhat topical. Let's see. In 2010, this game you probably won't know about because it was canceled. Stargate Worlds in 2010 was an MMORPG that was going to be based in the Stargate SG-1, you know, that television show universe, and they started work on it back in about 2004, 2006, right in there. Changed hands a couple of times, and then they officially put the death nail in the coffin in 2010 this week, which was a darn shame. I was sincerely hoping for a lot more Stargate content, but oh well. I'll just have to satisfy myself with the 10 seasons. Well, you know, and then there's more seasons of Atlantis. Anyway, I digress. We move on. The release in 2015 of Final Fantasy Record Keeper, a mobile game.
Is that legitimately a game?
Yeah, it is legit a game. It is, however, it's a mobile experience. It's not a full game in the way that we think about it. It's what you were thinking about when I say mobile game. It's something like that. It has unlocks, it has, you know, silly price things, cooldowns, all that sort of things. But Final Fantasy Record Keeper, what I loved about it was the sprite work. They took and they made, in basically the style of Final Fantasy VI, they remade characters and monsters from all across the spectrum of the Final Fantasy franchise. And as someone who likes to put together a few perlers and beads and sprites from video games, it's something that definitely appeals to me. And then the last one, perhaps the most important, RuneScape.
Ooh.
Released in 2001. An open world MMORPG, very easy on the system requirements. Built, designed to be played in browser, so that if you had a browser, if you had a computer that could run that, you would be able to play it. It was built by a couple of brothers in a basement. Most users of an MMORPG, like, I'm talking, like, the record for having the most users goes to RuneScape. 254 million user accounts as of 2017. I believe for something like World of Warcraft is only up there at, like, single-digit millions. It has the most updates of any MMORPG at over 1,000 updates, and the most original music scores in a game, I believe in a game, period, not just an MMORPG, at over 1,200. So, yeah, pretty impressive for something that started out with a couple of dudes, a couple of brothers in a basement. I think we ought to call that history for time, but it was a good week, a very good week for video games.
It is time for the topic of the week, where we talk about something relevant in gaming and give our opinions on it. Mac, this was a slow news week in my opinion, so I just want to get your perspective. Let's just talk like friends. Crazy concept. We've officially hit a year, right, of quarantine for most of us. And you know, I follow the markets, and I've noticed a lot of gaming companies have increased revenue over the past year. People have been home. They've been able to download more. They've been able to play more, right? People that had to commute before don't have to commute. They have more time for games. How has COVID, and this is a question for everyone in the chat, and the quarantine that came with it, changed your gaming habits? Did you game more? Did you game less? Because maybe you had more time, did you try out some different genres? Did you do more stuff over Discord with your friends? Like, I'm curious from everybody. Like, how did this past year change you as a gamer? I'd love to hear perspectives from Mac and from the chat.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll start off. This past year, I would say, has really impacted my gaming in that I increased the rate at which I did TTRPGs. My video game habits haven't changed that much. If anything, my game playing has actually decreased a bit. And I've opted instead to play Dungeons & Dragons, GURPS, and whatever other people are willing to play online, you know, video conferencing with other people. That has been my big change. And I think it's been really, really helpful. I think I'm better off psychologically because of that ability to spend more time playing, even digitally, face-to-face with other people. I think, yeah. So I know that's a little bit beyond the question that you were asking, but that is, I can say, how my gaming habits have changed. More tabletop role-playing.
Yeah, and I that actually is what I was asking, so that was a great answer. And Mac, the same thing applied to me. So before, you know, the COVID thing, I always felt like I was trying to find a balance between content creation, right, the podcast, the Twitch, and also going out and writing new jokes, right? And you can really only do that in person, trying out new material. So if I went to do an open mic, like, it was, there was no way I was also gaming that night, right? There was no way that I was having a night each week where I would get together with a group of friends and do a role-playing game. Because I just didn't have time, right? I was always trying to write new jokes. And so this year totally changed that. Like, you know, I do the GURPS with you almost every Thursday. We've recently switched to every other, but for a while we were meeting every week. We were going through on this journey. You were the GM, and we were having a blast, and it's still going on a year later. We were talking about it this past week. We just basically hit a year of doing that. And I remember when this whole thing started, the four people in our group, we said, you know, let's do this now while we have time, right? Who knows how long this will last, the COVID thing, but let's get this started while we all have some free time and let's do it. And we did. And it's still going on. And I don't know if I ever would have been involved in something that awesome had COVID not happened. Obviously, I wish COVID never happened, right? But it gave me the time to do this.
I mean, I'm just grateful that we're the recipients of your not going to the clubs anymore.
Not going to the comedy clubs, yeah. Mm-hmm. As much.
Now, we've got a few different perspectives that are offered in the chat. For example, Crux has been playing a lot less board games because, you know, well, less in-person stuff, but a lot more tabletop simulator. Other people, yep, their tabletop RPGs have skyrocketed. I mean, for Crux, no video games at all, but for someone like Metzgirl, she actually plays video games now, as opposed to previously, where didn't really do it all. Rolf has kind of had the opposite experience as me. Nothing's really changed on his side of video games, but he's playing way less tabletop RPGs.
You know, I can't sit here and say that I tried a whole bunch of new genres. You know, I pretty much stuck to the stuff that I like, right? The occasional RPG, some shooters, and some retro stuff, right? Stuff with the kids on the Switch. But I, like, just once again, the unity in doing a game over Discord each week is probably the biggest change that I experienced that I don't know if I would have before. Because I know right before, and I'll end on this for sake of time, right before this whole thing hit, the coronavirus, I had gone out like once or twice with you when you came into town and done D&D.
Fantastic. Trips, by the way.
Yeah, it was great fun. It was great fun. And I was like, this is so cool. But I don't know, because I don't know enough about the game, I don't know if I feel comfortable going back without a friend, right? And just playing with strangers. And so now I feel way more comfortable doing that, because I just spent a year doing it over the internet with people who I know and have gotten to know. So in that sense, it's really been a good gaming thing for me. Mac, anything else you want to say before we move on?
No, I think that's about it.
Awesome. That has been our topic of the week.
All right, well, now we turn to a crowdfunding project that's trying to get off of the ground. You know how this game is played. I'll post a link in the chat. Those of you who are here with us live can take a look as well alongside us. And at the end, we're going to give our very unscientific opinion as to whether or not we think it should be kickstarted or whether it should be kicked out of here. Here we go. This is called Astral Ascent. Since the time that I selected this to talk about, and now, it has passed its crowdfunding goal, so it is going to be developed by a small studio in France. Obviously, there are things here that if you know me, you're like, I know why Mac picked this. It's got beautiful pixels. I like the pixels. I'm not much of a 2D platformer beat-em-up guy, especially because it has that sort of beat-em-up kind of feel to it. But 2D platformers? Pixels? Sign me up. What they were looking for was $35,000 in order to bring the game to life. Obviously, they've exceeded that, as I said. If you're interested in a copy of the game, sort of your entry level is 20 euros, because of course, you know, France, so that's 24 US dollars. Getting a digital copy for $20 as soon as it goes into early access on Steam, which they're expecting is going to be March 2022. And in something that I think will very much appeal to you, Mr. Nice Guy, is that they are planning from the outset, as they point out on the video, to release for PC, for PlayStation, and for Switch.
Ooh, fantastic.
Indeed. And if you are looking for, if you're looking to get in and back at the Switch level, hang on, I had it here. Even the 26, select the console platform you prefer a later survey. Yeah. So, yeah, the initial buy-in, that 24 US dollar, that 20 euro level, isn't going to cover a Switch copy. That'd just be PC only.
Okay.
If you are the type of person like Mr. Nice Guy, a couple extra euros, you know, a few extra dollars, and you'll get the option to get the digital copy for your console upon release, including the Switch version. So I know that that very much plays well with you, Mr. Nice Guy. You think the place for indie, the home for indies, where is it, Mr. Nice Guy?
It's on the Nintendo Switch, ladies and gentlemen.
So, you know, we know how he feels about it. There's one last thing I want to say about this, but I want to get some of your hot takes, Mr. Nice Guy.
Yeah, my hot takes are not that interesting. I think this looks great. 2 years out is disappointing, right? That's a long time, you know? Just generally speaking, when I think about games that I heard about 2 years ago that still aren't out, I don't think about them. You know, unless I kickstarted one of them and it hasn't come out. Looking at you, Hazelnut Bastille. Where are you at?
They're working on it, dude. They're working.
I know. Yeah, they're working. They're using our money to buy donuts and they're working on it. And that's the thing is, I feel like 2 years is a long time. I like that they're not rushing it. But it's hard for me to put money down for something that's so far out. Now, I like the artwork. I think it looks fantastic. I like the premise. And I like that they're doing it in pixel, but they actually have full more modern designs of the characters drawn here. I think that shows some attention to detail and some care. The gameplay looks really fluid. And you know what? I would normally say that $24 is too much. And I'll be honest with you, I'm still going to say that here. I think especially for $2 more for Switch, that it's just too much. However, I respect the fact that not all platforms are created equal and that sometimes it costs more to get things on one platform than another. But this just looks like a smooth game. It shows the damage that people are taking when you do damage to them in terms of the number of hit points. And I think this is going to be a fun game.
Yeah, I think it looks fun as well. And there is fantastic news, because you know me, I have a thing. If you want my money, you need to show to me that you can bring everything together in a cohesive video game package. That is music, that's programming, that's hit detection, that's art. And so, the best way to do that is with a playable demo, and this game does have, front and center, a playable demo. So, I think it's important for, if you are curious at all about backing this, that you have the option to take a look for yourself and see, instead of having to rely on flashy gimmicks and videos put out by the marketing companies. So you have that option. Now, for my part, Mr. Nice Guy, I like the look. I like everything about it, and it does have a playable demo. That puts it solidly in the kickstart column for me. I mean, yeah, I agree with you. $20 is a little bit high and 2 years is a little ways out, but I can be patient.
Yeah, I'm going to say I'm really on the fence with this, because I think it's going to be successful and I think it's a unique enough idea that I want it to do well. So I'm actually going to say Kickstarter as well. I wouldn't personally put my own money down on this, because it's going to come out and there's going to be a sale on Switch and it's already funded, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
correct.
It's gonna get made. Like, we know it's gonna get made, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I say Kickstarter.
All right. Well, we encourage you who are here with us live, let us know what you think live in the chat. And those of you who are listening to this podcast after the fact, just shout it out on your commute. We are tabulating the results from here.
Awesome. And now it is time for Nerdflex
Woo-hoo.
A segment where you, the viewers, try to stump the hosts. And last week, Mac, they got us with all three questions. We got them all wrong, if I remember.
Yep, I believe so. It was a clean sweep. Which I think it's only fair that because last time was a clean sweep, that we this time turn it around first on you by putting out a new sound test. So on Twitter, if you happen to know this, tweet at Two Nerds in a Pod with the hashtag sound test and identify this episode, episode 183. And if you are the lucky person to first correctly identify the game, you will have a little something special sent from us to you. I hope you're ready.
No permanent damage, thank you.
All right. Now, let's talk about those questions.
Let's do it. So, if you're here live, you have a job to do. Type those questions into the chat. And I should have said this earlier. Ideally, they should be multiple choice.
And video game related.
But we do have a question from Crux Capacitor. Mac, would you mind reading that? I'm a little bit parched.
Crux asks, who published Don Ponchi and Dodon Ponchi? Was it A, Topolin? Toalpin. There we go. Is it B, Altus, C, Cave, or D, Konami? And I feel like, Mr. Nice Guy, you got any ideas? Because I've got one brewing in the back of my head.
So I believe, I mean, even just from the name, Dodonpachi, I believe it was like an old arcade game.
Okay.
I think, because I might even have it on my RetroPie.
Oh.
Which I think about games that are made like old school arcade games. I think Konami.
Uh-huh.
That's what I lean towards. Atlas I have heard of, and I think... I don't think it's Atlas. I think that it is Konami, but I don't know for sure. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm definitely willing to go with you on this. I know that Konami's, that there's been some sort of a weird thing. There's like a style of game that's not so much a game, but it's more like a gambling thing. And I think it's called Pachi. That Konami's been getting crap for only producing games like that, or at least they were for a while there. So I'm inclined to agree with you. I'll go with you on D, Konami.
All right, D, Konami. Final answer. Let us know in the chat if that is correct.
Crux says, it was a tricky question. Cave, the legendary shmup company, developed it, but Atlas published it, and is the only company on the cover art of both games. So it would have been Atlas as the publisher.
Not Konami.
Mm-mm. And I think I was also wrong because I think it's like Pachinko, not Pachi. I think Pachinko Games or something like that is what... Anyway, neither here nor there. What's that test bank question?
Here's the test bank question, Mac. It's about one of your favorite games. Not really. Rockstar Games. What Scottish comedian could the player go and see in GTA 4, The Lost and Damned? Which Scottish comedian could the player go and see in GTA 4, The Lost and Damned? I know, this is like all me, like, nice guy, you've played GTA, and also you're a comedian, so you better get this one right. No pressure.
Yep, no pressure.
Is Ricky Gervais Scottish?
No.
He's not.
No.
Dang it. I seem to remember, like, I don't know why I thought he was in GTA 4. Did I
he
say
seems
GTA
the
5
type.
Earlier? It's GTA 4. Oh, man. Scottish comedian. I have no idea. I feel like it's got to be a fairly big name. And I just don't know who it is. So.
I have no idea at all.
Well, you know what? I'm excited to know who it is. I'm going to go with Ricky Gervais. We got to set this up so we have, like, phone a friend or something. You know what I mean?
Wouldn't that be fantastic? Phone a friend will be like, okay, let's just call up Ricky Gervais and ask him. Beep, boop, 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 boop.
Yeah.
Hey, Ricky, who's the famous Scottish comedian? Thanks, buddy. Yeah.
Never call me again. Click. Yeah, I don't know, man. I feel like I just want to know the answer at this point.
Yeah. I
would have never gotten this. Frankie Boyle.
Frankie Boyle.
And I don't know who Frankie Boyle is. I'll be honest. So now I know that Frankie Boyle was in GTA, and everyone in the chat was stumped with that as well. So we'll do one last question from the test bank, Mac. And if we go 2 weeks with no answers correct, it's okay. Because this is like, whose line is it anyway? The points don't matter. All right, this is an interesting one. What Nintendo franchise has Nintendo published on a Sega console? What Nintendo franchise has Nintendo published on a Sega console?
Wow. Okay. So, I'm trying to think. Well, that does limit it down, right? Because for Sega consoles, we have the Game Gear. We have the Dreamcast, the Genesis, and the Master System. So, of those consoles, Nintendo franchises, I suppose there are those games where we have, like, crossovers that are, like, brawlers, you know, like Capcom versus whatever.
Marvel Street Fighter versus Capcom. Capcom.
Oh, yeah, Marvel versus Capcom, or Street Fighter versus Capcom, or, you know, whatever. Oh, yeah, Saturn, that's right, the Sega Saturn.
Yeah. Sega CD, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of.
Thanks for the assist, guys, by the way.
Let's talk Nintendo franchises, because this will help us narrow it down.
So, Mario, obviously.
Mario, Star Fox.
Oh, there were a couple of Legend of Zelda games on the Philips CDI, but I don't think that the Philips, that's not a Sega console.
That's not
console.
Sega, yeah.
So, yeah.
So, we've got Star Fox, we've got Metroid. Uh-huh. We've got Pokemon, we've got, what else? Donkey Kong. Uh-huh. And I'm just going to immediately eliminate, like, Mario, Donkey Kong, Star Fox, Zelda. Like, none of those, you know, Super Smash Bros., like, none of those were ever on. So what does that leave? Like, Metroid, Pokemon.
Donkey Kong. And I think of those, I think Donkey Kong might be the most likely.
No, because I feel like if there was a Donkey Kong game, just because I'm such a huge Donkey Kong fan.
True. If there was, you would have heard of it.
I would have played that, because I loved Donkey Kong as a kid, like Donkey Kong Country and stuff.
But would you have loved Donkey Kong enough to go buy one of the dreaded Sega consoles in order to do that?
Ooh, probably not.
What's the franchise that, like, Roy and Marth are from? Kane's helping us out with the name Fire Emblem.
Fire Emblem. That's right.
Yeah. So,
I don't think it's Fire Emblem. I don't. We've already spent a lot of time on this.
You know, it's not a multiple choice. Let's both go with our own answers. I'm gonna go Fire Emblem.
Okay. I'm gonna go Earthbound with that.
Earthbound. Okay. What is the answer?
The answer is. Wow. The answer is Pokemon.
Pokemon?
On the Sega Pico.
On the Sega Pico? Ah, get out of here with that nonsense.
That's a crazy question. For the sake of time, that has been Nerdflix.
Wow. Okay. Well, thanks everybody who participated. I'm still a little shook, but...
I'm going to Google that right now. I don't
know. Well, now let's turn to a little bit of legalese.
Legalese.
Every day, believe it or not... lawsuits shape how we play video games, and so we're going to talk about some of that. And this is going to be one kind of from the past. In the 1980s, most consoles and video games were either based off of 8 or 16-bit architecture, right? And as a result, there were these kinds of constraints in the systems themselves that meant that your ability to express an idea in a video game was somewhat limited by the tools at your disposal, right?
Yep.
In previous legalese segments, we have considered what it means to have things that are just too close with respect to ideas like copyright infringement. And as we know, you can't copyright an idea, just the expression of the idea. To quote one of the more direct explanations from the suit Harper Row Publishers v. Nation Enterprises in 1985, quote, "No author may copyright facts or ideas." Clear as crystal. And that's a suit that's referenced a lot in copyright disputes. So
for sure, yeah.
So let's talk. Here we enter Freiberger v. IBM from 1987. Now, Freiberger was an employee making video games for the IBM PC Junior computer, and he built a prototype game called Tricky Trapper in 1982, which he demoed for the company. About a year later, the company, IBM, released a game called Mouser, which was close enough to his prototype game that he brought suit for their alleged theft. Now, there are three things that you want to be able to show when you're claiming copyright infringement, and those are, one, you own the copyrighted work. Two, the alleged thief had access to the work. And number three, your work and the stolen work are substantially similar. So items number one and two from the list were not in question during the suit, and it all came down to item number three. And this is where Freiberger v. IBM winds up being a real important case in video game history and in copyright. At the end of the suit, the Ninth Circuit sided with IBM and concluded, and I'll give us a couple of quotes from it, quote, "We believe that each of the similar features constitutes a basic idea of the video games, and to the extent that each feature is expressive, that expression is, as a practical matter, indispensable, or at least standard in the treatment of a given idea," end quote. In other words, the similarities between the two are just the similarities inherent in the concept itself, rather than those that would have come from stealing the ideas. The idea, or this principle, has a Latin name, because of course it does, called sens affaire, and, you know, if you don't like the way I'm saying it, it's Latin, it's a dead language, I can say it however I want, come at me, bro. And it crops up from time to time in intellectual copyright disputes. A little bit less so these days, as there are many more ways for games to differentiate themselves now that there are more dimensions to explore. But the idea is that even if you have a video game, you have a copyright, you have the sole right to that expression of that idea, they are saying that sometimes, especially limited by technology, the expression might be so close, not because you stole it, but just because, hey, there's only so many ideas, there's so many ways to depict a mouse or a cat moving around in an area, and that's not necessarily theft. That might just be similar thinking. So anyway, there's a little bit of legalese for you. Freiberger v. IBM from 1987.
Awesome. And ladies and gentlemen, that has been our show. But before we go, we have one last segment called What We've Been Watching and What We've Been Playing, where we talk about just that. The cool, nerdy stuff we've been into across all platforms, across all streaming services. And if you're here live, you have a job to do, let us know in the chat what stuff you've been watching and playing, because we're always looking for cool, nerdy stuff to get into. Mac, what you been into this week, man?
Dude, so I've been playing some Strider and some Chasm, of course, prepping for a thing coming up at the end of next month, at the end of April.
Okay.
Nice. And that's mostly what I've been playing. However, there is this thing that I've been watching. It's called Eurovision. Are you familiar with Eurovision?
I am not. Tell me about it.
Eurovision is this competition. And it's, I don't know if it's appropriate and proper to call it like a meme song contest, but sometimes it sure feels like a meme song contest. And there is a song put forth by the folks from Iceland. It's called 10 Years. It is amazing. I love it. It's terrific. And the music video that goes along with it is funny as well. Crux Capacitor points out that that's how ABBA got famous. And yeah, there are just these fantastic songs, like Electro Velvet, Still in Love with You. That was the UK's from a few years back. I've been surprised by how many really good songs, good musics, and genres I've been introduced to because of Eurovision. So I've been into Eurovision, and it's great.
Nice.
And that's me.
Nice. So I've really, really been into freaking Captain America, and or rather not Captain America, Falcon and the Winter Soldier on Disney Plus. I find it to be awesome. I feel like it's like watching a Marvel movie,
better than WandaVision, in my opinion. Really good. There's a new Mighty Ducks show, Matt. Did you watch the Mighty Ducks growing up?
I did. Emilio Estevez et al.
Emilio Estevez, the Mighty Duck Man. He is in the new show. You know what? I feel like people are just running out of ideas. So anything that was like an 80s or 90s show that was remotely popular, they're bringing it back. And they brought this back. Emilio Estevez is a little bit overweight. He's eaten, you know, leftover birthday cakes.
Well, he put on the COVID-19 pounds like we all did.
He did. And, you know, like he works at this ice rink place. And he, like, anytime someone has a birthday party and they leave the cake and don't finish it, he, like, gets the cake and he just, like, gets a fork and, like, eats the cake.
Like real talk? Like, that's really happening in the thing? Or is
that's
this
really happening in the show? Like, spoiler alert.
Okay.
But anyway, it's just kind of an interesting show. But obviously, it's about the Mighty Ducks, right? So, anyway, I've been watching that. What else? Arrow. I've been watching some Arrow. And as far as what I have been playing, still working on Assassin's Creed Valhalla. My kids put together a whole world, man, for me to play in Super Mario Maker 2. They're on spring break right now, and they're like, Dad, you've got to try this level, and it was freaking fun. It's really cool to see my kids be creative like that. And I've been playing other stuff, but it leaves me at the moment. What are people into in the chat, Mac?
Well, I'll take the watching, because some of them are putting you on notice. So, Beleg Maradin's watching Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Let's see. Frosty Jeff is watching Attack on Titan, baby! Uncle Ruckus is watching The Sopranos, The Simpsons, and The Office, the U.S. version. Rolf is watching Game of Thrones, a bit of Fry and Laurie. Fantastic stuff there. And people are taking issue with your comment of the Winter Soldier being better than WandaVision. Beleg Maradin says, no, not better than WandaVision. And Metzgirl says, not better than WandaVision. How dare you?
Get out of here. Okay, who needs to get muted?
Metzgirl is also watching The Good Place and Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And Poonicorns has been watching Taskmaster, which is terrific. Oh, and Beleg Maradin got caught up on Star Trek Discovery, and he has thoughts, and I look forward to hearing them.
Wow, and shout out to Kane for giving out tier 1 subs. A couple tier 1 subs from Kane. Appreciate you, brother. Are we legit talking about WandaVision being better than...
As the post-show. The post-show, we will entertain the thing. We are on a mission.
We are on a mission, and we need to read what people have been playing, right? So, Ruckus has been playing Satisfactory, Madden 21, Payday 2, and Crash 4. Beleg Moran's been playing Call of Cthulhu?
Cthulhu.
What else did I miss up top? I'm scrolling back up. I think I missed nothing. Ralph played Crusader Kings 3. Drawfmantic, I don't know what that is, but it sounds awesome. Satisfactory and Slay the Spire. And I'm ignoring Mets Girl because she's crazy with her TV show opinions. No, I'm just kidding. She's been playing GURPS. Poonicorn. Oh, Jesus. You guys talk too fast. I love you all. I think I said everything that people are playing, right?
If
I missed something, I apologize. Thank you so much for tuning in to episode 183 of Two Nerds in a Pod. Y'all are the best viewers on Twitch. Stick around for the post show, where I will tell everyone why Captain America is better. Tune in next week. Same bat place, same bat time, same bat rhymes. Y'all are the best. Be good to each other. Bye.
See ya.